we're holding on page 156 in Rosh Hashanah, Oischof Zayin. So the Mishnayos in our Perek talk about a number of takonis that were made by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and talks about the fact that they made a takonah after the Churban, that the shofar would be blown instead of before it was blown on when Rosh Hashanah was on Shabbos in Yerushalayim. Now it would be blown in Yavne, and they made various other takonis that also have to do with the changeover to the fact that Sanhedrin is in Yavne. So the Gemara is going to talk about that the Sanhedrin went into exile, into Golos, in various places, among them Yavne. But first, by preface to that, the Gemara is going to explain that the Shechina did the same thing. It left the Beis Mikdash in stages. Ultimately, we know the Shechina left the Beis Mikdash. The idea was, it's mentioned in various places, because the Jewish people were worshipping Avodah Zarah, and it even brought Avodah Zarah into the Heichal, and Hashem said, so to speak, the Beis Mikdash is not big enough for me and Avodah Zarah, so therefore Hashem left. But he left in stages to give the Jewish people time to do tshuva, and actually the Medrash says on it, the Medrash compares it to a king who's forced to leave his palace, and he comes back and he starts hugging and kissing the pillars and the walls and everything, and saying how much he misses them and how much he's going to miss them, and he hopes that everything will be well with them, and so the same way Hashem is withdrawing from the Beis Mikdash in stages. So Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Yehuda bar Idi, Amar of Yechanan, Esam Asois Nasa Shechina. The Shechina left the Beis Mikdash in 10 stages, B'chulam V'kroi, all of which we can learn from Psukim. We have a pasuk that expresses, that shows about each one of those stages. Uchnegnim Golsa Sanhedrin, corresponding to that. The Sanhedrin went into Golos in 10 different stages. That we know Migmara, that we don't have Psukim for, that we know B'kabbalah, that's how it was. So first it's going to go through the 10 stages of the Shechina, and then the 10 stages of the Sanhedrin. There's a vort also from the Rebbeim, from the Friedrich Rebbe and from our Rebbe, that says also Lubavitch had 10 Golias, and how exactly to count them is a bit of discussion, but you have from Lubavitch to Rostov, and from Rostov to Petersburg, and so on and so forth, until it wound up here in Crown Heights. So, Esam Asois Nasa Shechina Mikroi. So we have Psukim as follows. The list, and then the Psukim. Mikapodas the Krum. First, the Shechina went from the Kaporis, which is on top of the Oroin, where, as it says in the Psukim, in Parshas Truma, Hashem says, my Shechina will rest there between the Kruvim that are attached to the Kaporis, and Hashem would speak to Moshe from there. So from there, it moved to the Kruv. Now, we've learned before that besides for the Kruvim that were built into the Kaporis, there were also large, oversized Kruvim made out of wood and plated with gold that Shlomo HaMelech made in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So their wings stretched from one end to the other of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then the Oren was underneath them. So it was like they're protecting the Oren with their wings. So now the first stage was that the Shechina left the Kaporis and moved on to one of those Kruv. Umi Kruv la Kruv, then from one Kruv it goes to the other. Umi Kruv la Miftan, from there it went to the threshold of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Or it can mean, it doesn't say actually which threshold, so it can mean the threshold of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, or it can mean the threshold of the Heichal. Rashi says the latter, he says the Miftah means Habayis, the threshold of the building, of the Heichal as a whole. Umi Miftah Machotzer, then from there it went to the Chotzer, to the Azora, which is specifically, Rashi says, to the area of Bein Ha'olam V'Lamizbeah. The area between the Mizbeach and the Ulam, the front entryway of the Heichal, has a higher degree of Kedusha. Kohenim who haven't cut their hair are not allowed to go in there. Kohenim who haven't done Kiddush Adayim Raglayim are not allowed to go in there. So it's a higher level of Kedusha than the rest of the Azara. So the Shina went there. Umichotel Mizbeach, from there it went to the Mizbeach of Pitzin. Umichotel Lagag, from there it went to the roof of the Heichal. Now, on the face of it, that one seems to be going backward because doesn't the Heichal have greater Kedusha than the Mizbeach? As a matter of fact, not, because in particular, the Rif points out over here, there's a halacha called Gagin Va'aliyas Lo Niskadshu, the roofs and the upper chambers in the Beis Mikdash don't have the same degree of Kedusha. So therefore, yes, Mizbeach has a higher level of Kedusha than the roof of the Heichal. For example, in principle, you could shecht Kodshim on top of the Mizbeach. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to shecht them next to the Mizbeach, but b'dieved, if you brought it up there and shechted it, the korban is kosher. Whereas if you were to shecht it on the Heichal, it would, on the roof of the Heichal, it would be possible. So therefore, so it went to the roof. Omi gag lochoima. From there, it went to the wall of the Azara. Omi choima la'ir. From there to the city of Yerushalayim. Omi ir lahar. From the city, it went to the mountain to Har Hazesim. Omi har la'midbar. From there to the desert. Omi midbar also the Yoshua b'mekoima. And from there, that was the tenth and final stage. And from there, it went up and returned to its place in Shamayim. Really, actually, the place of the Shechina, Ikar Shechina, B'tachtonim Hosa, as we know from Basi Lagani, but we mean the place where to which it withdrew after the seven generations that it talks about over there. So now it went back to the same place. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Hashem says, Eilech Hashuv El Makomi, I will go and return to my place, meaning, in other words, Hashem is saying that it was, so to speak, they don't want me here on earth, so I'll go back to Shemayim. So my Shechina will go back to Shemayim. Each of these, you have in particular one of them, the one about when it left the Mizbeach to go up to the roof, that Adak on a posik over there mentioned that that this had to do with, from then on, there was much less nevuah. So each of these stages, it seems, there was some kind of diminution it wasn't just, first of all, obviously anybody who has the sensitivity to realize where the Shechina is going to realize there's a tremendous change, but it seems that also many, if not all of them, actually caused a change in terms of what kind of hashpa from Hashem is available to the Jewish people, and you could actually see differences in it. So, mikaporis lekruv, mikruv lekruv, or mikruv lemichtan. So where do we have those first few stages? So like this, dichtiv, originally the pasuk says, and by the way, why 10? Marsha points out, we often find that there are 10 levels of Kedusha, one above the other. Shnayis and Kalim, for example, mention that within Eretz Yisrael itself has greater Kedusha than all other lands. Within Eretz Yisrael itself, there are 10 degrees of Kedusha, with the Kodesh HaKadoshim being the highest. So the same way over here, when the Shechina withdrew, then it went in 10 stages. So the first view is like this. First, the pasuk says, "When I add to the chasham," Hashem tells Moshe that I will meet with you over there in the Kodesh Hakadoshim. "V'dibarti itchom al kaporis v'gomer," and I will speak to you from above the kaporis. As Rashi explains in a couple of places, I'm psukim. Moshe would stand in the Ohel Moed, in the Heichel, in the Kodesh, and he would hear the voice coming from the Kodesh Hakadoshim, and it would fill the entire Heichel, and then it would stop when it came to the door of the Heichel, so that nobody outside is able to hear it. Uchtim. Now you have so we see that originally the Shechina was on top of the Kaporis. Uchtiv by Yirkav al Kruv by Yorich. Now you have a pasuk describing that Hashem rode on a Kruv, on one of these Kruvim, one of these Malachim, and flew. Now Rashi says that should be taken out of the Gemara, because what does that have to do with over here? That's a pasuk that's referring to Yitzias Mitzrayim, when Hashem, so to speak, rode on a kruv to come and save the Jewish people and punish the Mitzrayim. So Rashi says it doesn't belong over here. So Rashi explains like this: since the Gemara is going to quote a pasuk next that says that Hashem's glory, the Shechina, came off the kruv, and the kruv, again, we don't mean the ones that are on the Orin, we mean the freestanding ones. That means, of necessity, it must have gone from the Orin to the kruv at some point. On the other hand, Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out maybe we can defend the Gersa that we have in the Gemara. It shows, in other words, that Hashem, so to speak, uses Kruvim sometimes as if they were his chariot, and therefore that's the highest HaKodesh, after all, carry Hashem's throne, so to speak. So therefore, the Gemara can be using that to show that there was a point when Hashem said, fine, my Shechina is not going to be on top of the Orin where it belongs, but it will be on top of one of the Kruvim. Next, Uchtiv, then Yechezkel has several nevuos over there where he describes seeing the Shechina progressively leaving the Beis Mikdash, and the idea was he's supposed to tell the people that, and he did, in order to motivate them to do tshuva, which unfortunately they didn't. So he describes the glory of Hashem, the Shechina, lifted off the kruv on which it was, and again we mean one of those freestanding kruvim, El Miftan Abayis, and went to the threshold of the building, the threshold of the Heifel. So we see, therefore, we have those first few stages that it started on the Kaporis, and then it went through the Kruv, and then from there it went to the, and then from there it went to the threshold. Next, when we miftan the chotzer, then it went from the threshold out to the chotzer, another pasuk in Yechezkel, by Yoram Kvod Hashem me'ala Kruv, Al Miftan Abayis, the glory of Hashem that had been on the Kruv lifted off So, onto the threshold, and then by Yimole HaBayis HaSa'onon, then the house, the Heichel, was filled with the cloud of the Shechina, the Chotzer Mole as Noga Kvod Hashem, and the Chotzer was filled with the glory of the, with the glow of the glory of Hashem. So we've seen it now, the glory of Hashem, the Shechina, had left the Heichel and left behind, so to speak, only a cloud, and now moved out to the Chotzer. Since this is in Perek Yud, in the previous pasuk, the previous one is in Perek Tes, then he's going in order, and he's describing how first it went to the Miftan, and then it went to the Chotzer. Now, the next stage was the Mizbeach. Here we have to go back to an earlier Navi. The next pasuk is from Amos. Now, Amos lived about 200 years before Yechezkel, but he, since logically the progression must be to go further and further out, Rashi explains, now, so therefore there'd be no reason why the Shekhinah would go to the Mizbeach and then go backwards back into the Heichel. Therefore, we have to understand that it means that Amos is saying a Nevuah about what's going to happen in the future 200 years after his times. And the pasuk says, Hashem mitzvah on the Mizbeach. He says, I saw Hashem standing on the Mizbeach. So in other words, he's seeing a Nevuah that there's going to come a point when Hashem is going to be standing, that Hashem, the Shekhinah, is going to be standing on the Mizbeach. Next, Mizbeach Lagag, then it goes to the roof, where again, the roof has a lesser level of kedusha. Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Mishlei, Tov l'sheves al pinas gog. It's better to sit on the corner of a roof. And the post continues, me'eshes midyonim v'chas, more than when you have a tov l'shevas apinas gog, actually, me'eshes midyonim uveis chover. Rashi actually quotes the end of the pasuk from the other one. This first one, Marsha points out, Rashi has the ends of the pasukim out of order. The end of the pasuk, tov l'shevas apinas gog, finishes, me'eshes midyonim v'chas. Me'eshes midonim b'chas, more than being with a wife who's quarrelsome and makes you angry. In other words, poshik shat doesn't mean exactly what it sounds like, that if a husband's not getting along with his wife, he'd do better to go sit on the corner of the roof and stay away from her until things blow over. Here, Hashem is saying, so to speak, the Jewish people are like a quarrelsome wife who are trying to anger me with Avodah Zarah and other Averis. So therefore, Hashem is saying, I don't need to be here, I'll go sit on the corner of the roof. So therefore, the Shekhinah is going up to the roof. Then umidag lochoima. From there it goes to the wall, and that means specifically the wall of the Azara. Marsha points out that since you have, the Gemara is going to soon quote the pasuk from Yechezkel that says it left the city and went to the mountain, so there's no stopover in between on the city, on the wall of the city. Therefore, we have to understand that the wall here means the wall of the Azara. Dichtiv. Here's another pasuk from Amos. V'hinei Hashem nitzav al choimas anoch. The pasuk says Hashem is standing on a wall of anoch. There's a number of explanations in the Mefarshim what anoch means. It means a wall that's plumbed, meaning, in other words, where you use a plumb line like builders do to make sure that the wall is exactly vertical. It means a wall that's going to be knocked down. There's a number of different explanations, including one very interesting one that it refers actually to the Azara, we know is also the seat of the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin consisted of 71 members, which is Gematria Anoch. Anyway, whatever the case, he sees Hashem standing on the wall, so therefore, again, indicating that he sees the Nevuah, there's going to come a point when the Shekhinah is standing on the wall of the Azar. Then, from there into the city of Yerushalayim, Dichtiv, Pasuk says, Kol Hashem la'ir yikra, the voice of Hashem calls out to the city. So we understand, in other words, at that point, the Shekhinah is in the city, in the city, outside the Hanabayas, and calling out to the people, do tshuva. Because after all, that's the whole point of this gradual withdrawal. Rashi says it's because Hashem is, so to speak, reluctant to leave, and is looking for and is hoping that the Jewish people will do tshuva. Then it went to the mountain, meaning Har HaZeisim, Dichtiv, as Yechezkel describes in another one of his nevuos, Vayal Kvod Hashem Me'al Teicheir, the glory of Hashem lifted up from within the city by Yamed Alahur and stood on the mountain on Har HaZeisim. We also have, it says, when the Shekhinah returns and at the end of the war of Gog and Magog, you have the Omnu Ragla by Yemahu al Har HaZeisim. Hashem will, so to speak, stand on Har HaZeisim, and from there we enter Yerushalayim. Yechezkel, by the way, describes later on in his Sefer, the end of Yechezkel, where he describes the third Beis Mikdash, Shibonim Heirav Yemenu, is almost like a mirror image of the beginning of the Sefer. At the beginning, he's describing the withdrawal of the Shekhinah from the Beis Hamikdash, and he concludes it by describing the third Beis Hamikdash, and he describes how the Shekhinah comes back in. So he says that it stood on the mountain, so therefore we see that was the next stage, that was the eighth stage where it went to the mountain. Omehar the Midbar, then the Shekhinah went to the desert. Dichtiv, another pasuk in Mishlei, Tov Sheves, the Eretz Midbar, better to live in a wilderness land. The end of the pasuk. So again, Rashi quotes the end of the pasuk of the other pasuk, but actually the end of the pasuk is the first pasuk ends Me'eshes Midyanim Ubeis Chaver. The first one about sitting on the roof ends off the Me'eshes Midyanim Ubeis Chaver better than being with a quarrelsome wife who brings in a friend. Meaning the mashal is, for example, imagine a married woman who brings in somebody else into the household other than her husband. The nimshal is that the Jewish people are bringing Avodah Zarah into the hayfal, and Hashem is saying, so to speak, there's not room for the two of us. Now the pasuk says, Tov Sheves Be'eretz Midbar Me'eshes Midyanim B'chas, better than a quarrelsome wife who makes him angry, which is what the Jewish people are doing to Hashem. So therefore Hashem is saying, better I'll be in the desert rather than among them. Midbar also the Yoshua Mimkoima, and then from the Midbar went up to and returned to its place in Shemayim, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, as recorded before, Elach Ashuva al Mekoimi, Hashem says, I'll go and return to my place, Ad Asher Yeshomu, until they feel guilty, until they realize what they've done, and then the Pasuk goes on to say, and then they'll seek out my face and they'll do tshuva. So Hashem is saying, meanwhile, until they do, the Shekhinah is going to have to stay l'mayim. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yechanan, Shisha Chadoshim Nisak v'Shekhinah v'Yisrael b'Midbar. For 6 months, the Shekhinah is waiting for the Jewish people in the Midbar. Shema Yachzir v'Tshuva. In case they do Tshuva. Veloy, and they didn't. Kivin Shalei Chazru, and they didn't do Tshuva. Amra, then the Shekhinah said, Tipach Nafshan u'Atzman, let their souls or themselves, Tipach, which means like be disappointed, literally means like blown up. Chenema, as the apostle says, "V'ainu Rishoyim Tichlena." The eyes of the Rishoyim will fail. Always in Tanakh, when you have an expression, Rashi mentions in B'chukosai, for example, when a person is looking forward to something and then they end up getting disappointed because it doesn't happen. It's called Kilyan Einayim. So here, "V'ainu Rishoyim Tichlena," the Rishoyim are going to suffer this Kilyan Einayim, this disappointment, Umonis Ovad Minhem. And a refuge has been lost from them, the sikvasa matach nafesh, and their hope is just going to be a disappointment. So in other words, that here their strength, what protects them, which is the Shekhinah, went away from them, and therefore now they're vulnerable. The Midrash should make a big point of the fact that the Shekhinah needed to leave the Beis Hamikdash, and otherwise the Goyim never could have taken it over and destroyed it. In fact, the Midrash mentions that, I think it was either Nebuchadnezzar or Titus, maybe both of them, whatever, that they're crowing and priding themselves on how they destroyed the Beis Hamikdash, and a voice comes from Shemayim and says, all you did was, it's like as if a flower was already ground, and you ground it. It's as if the person was already dead, and you killed it. Like, what have you accomplished? In other words, the Beis Hamikdash is just a shell without the Shekhinah in it, and that's what you were able to destroy. You would never have been able to if the Shekhinah was there. What's the 6 month, Dafka? Marsha gives a long explanation over here that from Asara B'Tevis until Shiva Asa B'Tamuz, or until Tes Tamuz, because we learned previously that by the first Beis Hamikdash, the way it says in the Pasuk, the walls of Yerushalayim were breached on Tes Tamuz, is 6 months. So in actual history, it was longer than that, because from the beginning of the siege of Yerushalayim until Yerushalayim was breached was about 2.5 years. But in terms of the calendar, it's 6 months. So Marsha says that's the 6 months that Hashem was waiting for them to do tshuva. And then Tes Tamuz, the Hashem, so to speak, gave up and returned the Shekhinah up Lamaila. And that's the day when Nebuchadnezzar's army, when the Kastim breached the walls of Yerushalayim and they stopped bringing the Korban Trumpet. He brings in this connection just the other day we had the eclipse, and the Gemara mentions in Sukkah, as we've learned before, that when there's an eclipse of the sun, it's a simen rala over Kavim, because they follow the sun. So therefore, in keeping with that, now what happens is, from Tevis until Tammuz, the sun is progressively getting stronger. Tevis is the time of the winter solstice, when the sun is as far south as it's going to be in its orbit, and therefore in the northern hemisphere, it's as cold as it's going to get. then it starts gradually moving northward and getting stronger, and then the energy that we get from it becomes stronger and stronger until Tammuz is at its peak, and then it starts receding. So those 6 months, then in keeping with that, the Goyim during that time, who are represented by the sun, are getting stronger and stronger. And so they're thinking, some always so some osis, as the Pasuk said, they think that their signs are real legitimate signs. They think that the signs in Shemayim point to their victory, and they don't realize that it's all Hashem running the show. And you have many psukim, he goes on to explain psukim in Kapitel Ayin Dalad, which talks about the Churban, that refers to all of this. So for those 6 months then, Hashem is waiting for the Jewish people to do tshuva, and they didn't. And therefore the Shekhinah went up to Shemayim. In the end now we have from the Tisha B'Av is already the time when the moon is getting larger. It starts getting larger from Rosh Chodesh, from the Merlin until the 15th. And yet, during that time, as it says in the Pasuk, we didn't see our signs, that even though that's the time when the moon is waxing, nevertheless, we didn't have, Hashem didn't help, that our mazel and our success should be waxing, because it didn't fit with Hashem's plans, and it didn't fit with how we were behaving. So ultimately, then that's the 6 months, and that's the sikvasim matach nafesh. That, in other words, that Marsha says, really what it is not really the Rishoyim are disappointed in a sense. It's Hashem who's disappointed, because he wanted the Jewish people to do tshuva, and they didn't follow through. But the Pasuk is talking it in terms of the Rishoyim, like the Rishoyim are going to be the ones disappointed out of respect to Hashem, because after all, it's the Rishoyim who brought all this about. So those are the ten masois of the Shekhinah. Then the Gemara continues, Chnegan Golsi Sanhedrin Gola Gemara. The fact that the Sanhedrin went into Golos is for 10 times, that's Gemara that we know only the Kabbalah from our Rebbe. Now Rashi explains this, that the Shekhinah withdrew in those 10 stages was the first Beis Mikdash. The Sanhedrin moving around from place to place that we're going to describe now is before and after the Churban of the second Churban. However, Marsha points out that actually it may be that even by the first Beis Mikdash, maybe also the Sanhedrin had to move. Given that the first stage was to leave the Lushkas HaGazis, and the Gemara elsewhere explains the reason is because there were more prevalent Rotzchim, and therefore the Sanhedrin decided we can't judge them anymore, and the only choice is to leave the Lushkas HaGazis, and now we can't judge Dinei Parshas anymore. Well, in the first Beis Mikdash, we know there was a problem of Avodah Zarah, Gilad Ayis, Shpichas Damim. Therefore, it's logical to assume, says Marsha, that before Churban Bayis Rishon, they also had to move. For the same reason. And therefore, the rest of the, even though the specific Golosin that we're mentioning over here were during and after the second Churban, it's very possible that there were similar ones to different places before the first Churban as well. So the 10 places are as follows. Lishkas HaGozis v'chanuts. The first one was they left Lishkas HaGozis, which is their office in the Beis Mikdash, and moved to Chanuyas. So Chanuyas literally means stores. So Rashi explains there were stores, there were areas of stores on the Har HaBayis. The pastures, because people are coming to buy things for Korbanos or whatever. The point is, again, that this way, only when the Sanhedrin is headquartered in Lushkas HaGozis, only then can they judge Dini Nefashis. So now, when they were seeing that Rotzchim are becoming more prevalent, so first of all, as we know, a Sanhedrin is not supposed to execute people too often. They have to try every which way to find a schus for the person. But besides that, also, some of these people were very highly politically connected, and the Sanhedrin didn't have the ability to judge them. So therefore, they decided the best thing to do is to leave the Lushkas HaGozis, and now at this point, we can't judge Dini Nefashis anymore. Therefore, at this point, in other words, we're going to have to leave it to Hashem to deal with such people. This was, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, it was 40 years before the Churban. With that said, by the way, Tosfos mentions in a couple of places, it may be that there were certain times during those 40 years when maybe they returned there on special occasions to judge individual cases of Dini Nefashis. Anyway, so that's the first one. Umechanuyas liYerushalayim. Then at some point they left Chanuyas and moved into the city of Yerushalayim proper. Yerushalayim liYavne. The next one was to Yavne. Now, that's the famous thing where Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai goes to Aspasianus, has himself smuggled out of the city and goes to Aspasianus and tells him, Ten the Yavne b'chachameha. Some historians say that maybe actually the Sanhedrin was already located in Yavne at that point, and Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai is just asking Aspasianus to make it official and let them be there and not persecute them. Others say that they actually moved at that time.
He asked the king
That's, yeah, they, Aspasianus was the Roman general, and he told him, you're gonna be, they're gonna appoint you the emperor, and when the news comes that in fact he was, then Aspasianus says, you can ask for anything you want, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked him for Yavne v'Chachameha, and the dynasty of Gamliel the Nasiim, and doctors for the Tzaddik, yeah, from the story in Anizokin, and in Perek Anizokin, who gave him. Why didn't he ask for the Vesnikdash? The Gemara discusses that, yeah, we'll eventually get that, Maniac, but that's a shame, yeah. Yeah. So that was the Yavne. Umi Yavne la'Usha. Then from Yavne, they moved to Usha. Now, Rashi explains, the idea is, basically, they moved wherever the Nasi moved to. So, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, who was the Nasi, or at least interim Nasi, for a period of time, he lived in Yavne, therefore the Sanhedrin moved there. Later on, Ram Gamliel lived in Usha, and therefore the Sanhedrin moved to Usha. Now, Rashi actually says Ram Gamliel HaZokin, but that seems to be a printing mistake. Ram Gamliel HaZokin passed away about 20 years before the Churban. The Pashtos, he means Ram Gamliel the Yavne, the usual Ram Gamliel in Shas, the one who Rabbi Yeshua was his Avdestim. Why they moved around, Rashi doesn't explain. The Sefer Doros HaRishonim on Jewish history explains that actually it had to do with what's going on with the Roman emperors. So he explains like this. You had Aspasianus was the emperor. After him was his son Titus. And Titus, since as we know from the story over there in Gittin, he had a mosquito pecking around in his brain. He didn't have much ability to harm the Jews. Then though came his brother, a fellow named Domitian, who was a terrible anti-Semite. And the Chachamim realized under his rule, it's too dangerous for us to be in Yavne. And therefore they moved to Usha, which is in the Galil, which is in the north of Eretz Yisrael, where it would be quiet. Then you have the next one in the Gemara, Usha Yavne. Then from Usha, they went back to Yavne. So Doros HaRishonim explains, eventually Domitian was assassinated. Besides that he was bad for the Jews, he wasn't really much better to the Romans either. So eventually some of his servants and ministers and whatever assassinated him. The next emperor, a fellow named Nerva, was a decent fellow. So therefore, under his rule, the Chachamim figured it safe to return to Yavne. Unfortunately, he ruled over only for a short time. And the next one after him, Trajan, was also a big anti-Semite. We haven't mentioned various places in the Gemara. So from Usha, they had to again leave Yavne and go to Usha where it was relatively safe. Eventually, then your next one you have is Usha to Shvarim. Then the next one after Usha is Shvarim. There's another town in the Galil. It's actually close to Usha. In the story in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when it tells the story of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava giving smicha to five or six of the Chachamim when the Romans had outlawed it, the Gemara mentions he was in a valley, in a mountain pass between Usha and Shvarim. So they're relatively close. The idea would be, he explains that by this time you're talking about this is after the war of Bar Kokhba and after the whole shnab that the Romans did over there. So after that, when the Sanhedrin was finally able to reconvene, they decided we need to keep an even lower profile. And by now, Usha was too well known as their location. So therefore, they moved to Shvarim, which is the next town over. Shvarim was Beis Sha'arim. The next one was Beis Sha'arim, which was where Rebbe. We find in a couple of places in Shas that Rebbe lived for a period of time in Beis Sha'arim. In particular, they found over there, archaeologically, they found a whole area of burials over there. Rebbe himself was buried over there. They found an inscription. Many Jews from all over the world came to be buried over there. So Rebbe, for a period of time, lived there. Apparently, it was like a central city in that part of the world. When we base Sha'arim with Tzipori, then from there to Tzipori, the Gemara mentions in Ksubis that later in life, Rebbe wasn't feeling well, so he moved to Tzipori, which is on top of a mountain, and therefore the air is fresher, and that would be better for his health. The Medrash says on it that he lived there for 17 years, and he said on himself, by Chi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Shvaas Yashonah, just as Yaakov lived his best years for 17 years in Mitzrayim, the same way I had my best 17 years in Tzipori. Or Tzipori to Tveri. And then from Tzipori, they went to Tveri. Rashi explains that Tveria was in the times of Antoninus, as we find, for example, Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where Antoninus asks Rebbe, he says, one of the things I want to accomplish is to have Tveria made into, I want to free it from taxes. I want to put out an official law that the citizens of Tveria, who include Rebbe himself and many of his Talmidim and so forth, are exempt from Roman taxes, and he asks Rebbe for advice how to accomplish that. So we see, therefore, from that Rebbe lived in Tveria. With that said, Doros HaRishonim says it may not have been What? So before that was saying that we lived in Beis Sha'arim and in Tzipori. But with that said, though, Dorus Rishonim says maybe actually not necessarily. Maybe Antoninus mentioned Tveria only because it was the biggest city in the area. But Rebbe himself may not have lived in Tveria, especially if low-lying, it wouldn't have been very good for his health. Rather, after Rebbe's times, then they moved to Tveria because, in particular in Rebbe Yechon's times, we find that the central yeshiva of Eretz Yisrael, which is the Sanhedrin, was located in Tveria. Anyway, Tveria amukam mikulam. Tveria is the deepest of all of them. Rashi explains it means they were the deepest. They were in the worst possible situation among all of those places. It also means that physically Tveria is the most low lying of all those areas by the shore of the Kinneret, a few hundred feet below sea level. Shenema, as the pasuk says, v'shafalt me'eretz tidaberi, you will be low down and you will speak from the ground. So in other words, as if they're prostrate and lying on the ground and speaking up from there, or may offer tishach imrasech, and you'll speak, you'll express your words from the dust. So in other words, there's going to come a point when they're in the lowest possible place. Rebbe Lozer says it wasn't 10 Golias, it was only 6. Now, the Pashas, he's not arguing on the actual historical facts, but he's combining together some of the ones. For example, when we said they went from Tveria, when they went from Yavne to Usha, and from Usha to Yavne, and from Yavne back to Usha, so he would count that all as one thing rather than back, and he'd count Yavne one time and Usha one time, and maybe he would count the ones in Yerushalayim itself as all one thing, because after all, it's all within the city of Yerushalayim. So therefore, he arrives at 6. Shenema, he says, you have another pasuk in Yeshaya that hints at 6. Ki heishach yoshve morim. The pasuk says Hashem has brought low those who sat in the heights. So it's referring to the Sanhedrin who originally sat in the Har Habayis and the Lushkas HaGazis, which is the almost the highest place in that part of Eretz Yisrael. Kiryon Nisgava, the exalted city. Yashpilana, he will lower it. Yashpila ad oret, he will lower it down to the ground. Yagiena ad ofo, he will make it touch the dust. So you have over there, then you have Heshach is 1, Yashvilena is 2, Yashvila is 3, Ad Oretz is 4, Yagiena is 5, and Ad Ofer is 6. In other words, Rashi says, because otherwise the pasuk is very wordy and repetitious, so therefore the extra words in the pasuk teach us to doubt it that way. Uchtiv, and then the pasuk continues, Tumasena Rogel, it will be trampled by the feet, Raglei Oni, the feet of the poor people, Pamei Dalim, the footsteps of the poor. Marsha explains over here the context of the pasuk is actually talking about the enemies of the Jewish people, the city of the famous wealthy city of Tsur and other ones like that always harassed the Jewish people and were looking forward to them being defeated, and now they themselves are going to be destroyed, and the Raglei Oni refers to Melech HaMashiach. So he says, but we're saying the same thing. In other words, we're saying that the Goliath of the Sanhedrin, eventually, when the footsteps of the Oni, when the footsteps of Mashiach come, then as the Gemara is going to go on to say, then the Sanhedrin will be reestablished from that low down place in Tveria, and from there they'll go to Yerushalayim. And in fact, he points out the context, if you look at the next couple of psukim, Yeshaya over there, that refers to the Mishpat of Hashem, and also that we can see that's all referring to the Sanhedrin, how it was beaten down and put as low down as possible, and from there, from that low place, it's going to be restored. So Amar Rav Yechon, Amar Shama Sid in Ligoyal, from that point, they're going to be redeemed. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Yisnari may offer, shake yourself off from the dust, Kumi Shvi Yerushalayim, come sit, get up and sit, Yerushalayim, and be at peace. So we see, in other words, that from that, from Yerida Tzarech Aliyah, all that being beaten down and then trampled into the dust is in order to have a greater Aliyah from that later on.
All that area.
Yeah, so the Rambam in fact mentions in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Kabbalah hi biyadim, the Chachamim have a Kabbalah, that when the Sanhedrin is reestablished, then it'll first be established in Tveria, or Misham, they're talking Mamikdash, and from there they'll move to the Beis Mikdash. He's basing himself on this Gemara over here. Some years back, Steinsaltz, all of a sudden, tried to convene a new Sanhedrin, in fact, that they started out in Tveria based on that. Okay. Further on in the Peret, it talks about the dinim of most of the dinim of the shofar. So it goes on to talk about the tefillas of Rosh Hashanah. You have the extra brachas in Shemana Esrei of Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, and how exactly those fit together with the brachas. The Gemara brings a few different opinions where exactly. Now, given you have like this, the regular Shemana Esrei. on Shabbos and Yom Tov is seven brachas. Here you have three extra brachas, Malchus, Sechernus, and Shofarus, but the fact is you don't have 10 brachas, in the end you only have 9, so one of these three has to be combined with one of the 7, and so the Mishnah mentions a couple of different opinions about how you fit them together. The Gemara in Brachas, by the way, explains why Takan 9 is because you have in Chana's Tefillah, she mentions Hashem's name 9 times. And since Rosh Hashanah, Nifkadachana, she was one of the ones that Hashem remembered and said that she's going to become pregnant the following year on Rosh Hashanah, so therefore we associate our Tefillah on Rosh Hashanah with her and we have 9 Brachas. Agav, worth mentioning in that connection, an interesting point that the Gaonim and the Rishonim talk about. It used to be a very common minhag in many kehilas that not everybody davened the 9 brachas on Shemoneh Esrei. There was a popular minhag. The Baal Amora mentions it. There a lot of other Rishonim mention that the tzibur would daven 7 brachas in Rosh Hashanah Musaf. They would daven a Rosh Hashanah Musaf similar to Rosh Hashanah Shachris. It would be, except that you'd have the psukim about the korbanos over there. Only the chazan would say the brachas, malchus, sefernes, and shofarus. Then over time, that minhag changed, and there's a number of the geonim were asked about it, and they said you shouldn't change, but nevertheless, eventually it changed, and that's the way it is universally. An interesting point is how that became so. There's the famous story of the Dalit Shavuyim. There's the famous story where there were 4 Talmid Chachamim who were on a boat and they were captured. They were taken prisoner by pirates, and then the pirates brought them around to different places all around the Mediterranean. And each one of them, in each place, the Jews were able to be Poyda Shavuyim, one of those Chachamim. The Ravid Alevi tells the story in a Sefer Seder HaKabbalah. It happened a little over 1,000 years ago in the mid 10th century. So he describes that these Chachamim came from the city of Bari, which is in South Italy, which at that time was a tremendous Mokum Torah. There's a Rabbeinu Tam said about the city of Bari a couple hundred years later. He said, Al Derech HaKeva Poskim Tzi and Teitzei Torah, or Bar HaShem Yerushalayim. He said, they used to say, Kimi Bari Teitzei Torah, to show how, what a tremendous place of Torah it was. Anyway, these 4 Chachamim came from there. So one of them was ransomed in Mitzrayim, another one in Kairouan in Tunisia, and the third one, Rav Moshe Rav Hanoich, was ransomed in Spain. Anyway, the vort is, Dodos Rishonim explains, since these Chachamim came from Italy, and they weren't so much in touch, in Italy they weren't as much in touch with the Gaonim in Bavel, because they're living under different governments. Bavel was ruled over by the Muslims at that point, and Italy is ruled over by Christians, so it's not so easy to get to even send letters from one to the other. They had the Kabbalah in Italy that everybody should be saying the 9 brachas on Shemoneh Esrei. So when they moved to these different kehilas and became the Rabbanim over there, then they instituted that minhag. So now these places are wondering, wait, our old minhag was to do only 7 brachas, and they would ask the Gaonim, and the Gaonim would tell them, yeah, you're supposed to do only 7 brachas in Tzibur. But nevertheless, the minhag of these Dalad Shuyim, of the minhag of Italy, eventually won out, and nowadays it's the universal thing that everybody says 9 brachas on Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara deals with the first, how do we know the order of brachas that we should be saying? So Tana Rabbanan, Minayin Sha'imim Ovos, how do we know that we start out with the bracha of Ovos? Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchok, Elokei Yaakov. Shenema, the passage says, Hovu Hashem b'nei Elin. Give to Hashem, you sons of the mighty ones. So Hovu Hashem, mention in front of Hashem the schos of the mighty ones of the Ovos. Marsha says, actually, you can break up the word b'nei, can go with the previous words. Hovu l'Hashem b'nei. You children mention to Hashem, Elim, the powerful ones. So therefore that's that bracha. Uminayin shayim gvuras. How do we know the next bracha is gvuras at the giver? Shenema, hovu l'Hashem, covered v'oz. The pasuk continues, give to Hashem strength and power. Speak of Hashem's power and strength, which is in the bracha of gvuras. Uminayin shayim kedushas Hashem. Then the next one is the bracha of kedushas Hashem at the kodesh. Shenema, the next pasuk continues, hovu l'Hashem, kvod shmoy, give to Hashem the glory of his name, ishtachvel Hashem behadras kodesh, and bow before Hashem in the glory of holiness. So that's the theme of the next bracha, which is the kedusha of Hashem. In fact, Maharsha points out by all of them it says hovu instead of tefillah, where the word hovu is gematria echad, the same gematria as the word echad. And the halacha is the first 3 brachas of Shemoneh Esrei actually count as one long bracha, which is why you have the din. If you make a mistake in them, for example, you say mashal v'ruach mor degeshem during the summer, or you don't say amalach hakodesh during Aseret Mitzvah, you have to start all over, because those 3 are considered one bracha. Then when Minayin Shem Malchus Sechronus Veshofris, then how do we know at that point you say the three brachas Malchus Sechronus and Shofris? Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Oymed Dichtiv. The pasuk says Shabboson Zichron Trua Mikra Kodesh. Yosh Hashanah is a day of resting, a day of remembering Trua, a day of holy calling. So he explains, Shabbosin Zekdushas Hayom, the word Shabbosin refers to the bracha about the holiness of the day, after B'chartanu, until Mekadosh Yisrael Vazmanim, or Rosh Hashanah, Mekadosh Yisrael, the Yom HaZikaron. Zikaron Elu Zichronis, then comes Zikaron, which refers to Zichronis, Trua Elu Shofris. True refers to Shofris. Now in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer says that you do have to say, he knows you have to say Malchus, but he says you combine together Malchus, he says you combine with the Bracha Atta Kodesh. In fact, we have actually on Nusach, on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, has much longer Atta Kodesh. You have the extra paragraphs of V'chein Yiskadish, of V'chein Ten Pachtecha, and so forth. I've seen a suggestion that maybe that's left over, even though primarily the Halacha is like Rav Akiva, who says that we combine together Malchus with Dushas Hayoim, we start after B'chartanu, and in the middle of it, we say Aleinu, and the Pesukim of Malchus. Nevertheless, maybe there's something like left over from that opinion that you said in Atta Kodesh. Anyway, Mikra Kodesh, Kadshayu, Vasiyas Malacha, and then the word Mikra Kodesh means that you should declare the day holy to not do Malach. Omalo Rav Akiva, but Rav Akiva says it doesn't really work out the order. Mipnei Malach, Noima Shabbosin, Shvois. Why should we say the word Shabbosin refers to not doing that? Hashem says stop from Malacha. Shabbat Pasuk HaKosuk Tchila. After all, that's what the Pasuk is talking about to begin with. The Pasuk is first saying that this is a day of Mikra Kodesh and a day we call Malacha Sabod Sasu. So we should understand that the word Shabbosin refers to not doing Malacha. El Shabbosin Kacheu Basias Malacha. So Shabbosin is not yet talking about the order of the brachas in davening. It means that the day when you're not allowed to do Malacha, Zikoron Elu Zichronis, Trua Elu Shofris, Mikra Kodesh Zukdusha Sayyoyim. And the word Mikra Kodesh refers to that you say the bracha of Kedusha Sayyoyim, that you say the bracha Atav Achartanu, and ending the Kaddish Yisrael V'yem HaZikoron, which talks about the Kedusha of the day. So then we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and talk about how do we know that you have Malchus in there, and how do we know what the order is. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Beis Nissen, which is the Yom Ha'Lula of the Rebbe Rashab. So there's the famous Sicha of Beis Nissen, Tavshin Mem Ches, which you have an excerpt of it pasted on the walls of 770 over there about the importance you have to add to the life of the Rebbe of Mashiach by everybody calling out Yechi HaMelech. This is why we make such a shurim and ifas in the Mashiach of calling out Ad Mosai, which brings the Geula closer and faster. And Yeshloimah, the Rebbe continues that besides that stresses how much we're looking forward and demanding that the Geula should come before Yom Mamash, there's also that includes the point that we're crowning the king. Yechi HaMelech is where, like what they said when Shloimah HaMelech, for example, was crowned, and that brings about the coming of David Malkum Mashiach. So our Maaseh Ha'Iker is to complete our Maaseinu V'Avodaseinu, and that also includes calling out and demanding Ad Mosai and calling out Yechi HaMelech David Malkum Mashiach as soon and as quickly as possible in a way of Simcha and Chayitz. Continuing with halachas, if your clothes get dirty, if your shoes get dirty, what about if your hand is dirty? So then you can't wipe it on a towel that would normally be used for wiping your hands, because then you might come to wash it on Shabbos. So you would first rinse off the dirt or whatever, and then you could wipe your hands on it.